Hello, and welcome to our third episode of Our Bodies, Our Stories. Last episode, we talked about participating in hookup culture and giving and receiving consent. In this episode, we will be continuing that discussion by talking about safe sex. Before the episode begins, we want to let you all know that we will be talking about alcohol, consenting to sexual activity while intoxicated, and stigmas about sex. If any of that makes you uncomfortable, please feel free to skip this episode, and we will have plenty of other discussions for you in the coming weeks.
So now that we've addressed navigating whether you want to participate in hookup culture, let's go ahead and talk about what happens in situations where you or your friends may be thinking about actually hooking up with someone. So let's start by talking about something that a lot of people are pretty confused about, alcohol and consent.
Yeah, consenting to a hookup while drunk or any other form of intoxication is something that I and a lot of my friends have struggled with. Something that's difficult in those party hookup type situations is knowing when my friends are too drunk or intoxicated in any way to go home with someone and fully consent. It's hard because I know a lot of people like to drink to loosen up before hooking up with someone, but I don't want any of my friends to end up in situations where they're too intoxicated to fully understand what's happening. So as we've discussed, consent should always, always be informed.
Yeah. And while we're on the topic, let's talk a little bit about using alcohol as a device to help you move past your boundaries when it comes to sex and maybe some other activities too. So part of the problem in our society is that sex is so stigmatized and uncomfortable in a way that makes a lot of people feel like they need to be intoxicated in order to engage in a hookup or have a good hookup. And this stigma can also lead to a fear of being yourself and shame in being confident about participating in sexual activity. So you may feel the need to hide that part of yourself when you're not intoxicated. So if you or your friends feel that way, firstly, we just want to say that it's not your fault and it's completely okay to not feel comfortable engaging in sexual activity yet, because gaining a healthy relationship with sex in your body is a growing and ongoing process. And society has conditioned all of us to believe that sex is unnatural and shouldn't be openly discussed or engaged in. So after you kind of come to terms with that fact that maybe you might be a little bit uncomfortable with sex and maybe you might feel the need to be intoxicated to engage in it, it might be helpful to examine why you might feel that way and brainstorm kind of ways to become more comfortable with our bodies while we're sober. So this might look like engaging in body positivity workshops. It might look like reading sex positive books and articles. It might look like talking to your loved ones about sex. There's so many different paths and so many different processes you can go through to kind of become more comfortable with your body.
Yeah, and it is a long process. So truly just stick with it. It does help in the long run. We're going to talk about stigma later in this episode. But yeah, it's definitely important to critically think about why you might feel the need to be intoxicated to have sex in the first place. So now that we've covered that, let's return to consenting to hookups while you're inebriated.
So something that I've heard is that if you're too drunk to drive a car, you're also too drunk to consent to sexual activity. So to be honest, if you're drunk at all, you shouldn't be driving a car. So it's kind of interesting to hear that applied to sex as well. And I think a lot of us probably had those kinds of experiences in high school where you like have to watch those videos of teenagers getting in car wrecks, and you talk about like texting while driving and all that kind of thing. So we're really taught that driving drunk is extremely dangerous. And I think we don't really apply that to sex enough. Like having sex while you're drunk can also have a lasting impact on your mental and physical health.
Yeah, no, truly that sounds like a good rule to me, because it kind of makes you evaluate the level that you're at in the moment. And some other signs that I use to tell if my friends are too intoxicated to be hooking up with people are usually slurred speech, vomiting, walking unsteadily. If they don't have control of their body, they should probably not be having sex.
Yeah, and it can also be really useful to have those conversations with your friends beforehand. So it can be good to discuss where they draw the line for themselves in terms of hooking up and inebriation. So you can be sure to look for those signs and be ready to intervene if you need to. So that being said, we know that sometimes at parties, you end up in situations where you're trying to look after more than one friend, or you lose track of your friend or your friends. With this in mind, it's important to remember that while we can and we should look out for our friends should also be looking out for themselves, and we should look out for ourselves. You should always have this self-efficacy to guide yourself through your sex life. So you should develop a relationship with yourself in which you can say, like, okay, my friends aren't around to stop me from hooking up with this person, but I feel a little too drunk to be having sex right now. So I think I'm going to call it a night.
Exactly. You need to be able to enforce your own boundaries. But at the end of the day, it's definitely better to be safe than sorry. If you have any doubt that you or a friend is sober enough to consent to a hookup, it's best to just stop the situation altogether. Waking up and regretting what happened or not remembering if you did something you're uncomfortable with is truly a terrifying feeling the next morning. So when in doubt, please just wait to make a sober decision. And if you choose to have sex while intoxicated, please remember to ask for and give continued consent throughout the hookup.
Yeah, so we know that that's a lot of rules, a lot of things to keep in mind, but we just really wanted to put that on the table because that's something that a lot of college students really struggle with and something that really can contribute to sexual violence rates at colleges. So it's really good to keep that in mind, kind of going into hookup culture. So now that we've discussed giving and receiving consent while intoxicated, we want to actually address the stigma we were talking about earlier that's associated with sex and birth control in a lot of AAPI communities. So I actually take birth control pills, also known as oral contraceptives, and I take them to control my acne, not for sexual reasons. So I remember when my dermatologist first recommended getting on birth control when I was 17. And like I said, it wasn't even for sex. It was just because of my skin. And my mom was so horrified by the idea. She kept saying, like, oh, Vivi's not having sex. And now that she's taking birth control pills, she's going to start having sex. And to her, that was like the end of the world.
Yeah, that's honestly, that is such an interesting response, especially since if you're going to have sex without trying to get pregnant, it's best to do it in a safe way, like on birth control pills or other forms of contraception, with an IUD maybe, condoms, etc. But I also think that the hesitance that your mom showed probably had a lot to do with just general AAPI culture and stigmas surrounding sex, especially femme-identifying people's sexuality. I know my mom constantly told me that I should wait till after college to have sex because she only had sex for the first time after she was married. But once I told her that I had sex the first time at the end of high school, she is a star and was extremely supportive, but I know that was an extremely hard mind block for her to get over coming from that culture.
Yeah, for sure. And when I was growing up, it was definitely not considered normal or even accepted for Asian parents to talk to their kids about healthy sexuality. So like the few conversations I've had with my mom about it have been like, just don't have sex. And I think that's great that Maya's mom was like really supportive after she had sex, but if we really think about it, she should have been supportive before she had sex, right? So I think there's this kind of assumption that people will just wait to have sex until they're married, which is so untrue and unfair. And while we shouldn't be making that assumption, if people do want to wait until marriage or until a certain age, that's also completely fine. No one should feel pressured to engage in sex before they're ready, and everyone moves at their own pace. But if you do want to wait, you should still learn and talk about sex. I remember learning about sex when I was like 12 in my health class and thinking like, oh, that's so irrelevant to me. And then a couple years later, I looked back and I was like, oh my God, what did my health teacher talk about? I don't remember any of it. And I wish I knew. So even if you don't think you're going to need the information in the near future, you probably will need it eventually.
Yeah. I have a younger cousin who's now, she's a freshman in high school. And I asked her just casually in a conversation if any of her friends were on birth control, because I was genuinely curious. And she, honestly, her reaction was just absurd to me. She squealed at me out of embarrassment. And for me, that was just kind of terrifying because I thought she was at an age where she felt that she could talk about it with me. But since then, I've kind of taken it upon myself to slowly introduce her to a world of sex and relationships until she reaches a place where she is comfortable with it. I just think not receiving adequate or comprehensive sex education from your parents is a really common experience in the Asian American community. It leads to countless problems that eventually prevent healthy relationships. So one of my friend's mom told her that if she ever had sex, no man would want to marry her. Again, part of the AAPI community. And y'all, these conversations and misinformation is still happening in the 21st century. Remember, when we say comprehensive sex education, we're not just talking about the 101 on how not to get pregnant or contact an STI. There are so many more factors that play into this. We're also talking about healthy relationships, sexual violence, and so many other topics.
Yeah, and it's really important for us to address the stigma for so many reasons. Firstly, in terms of prevention against pregnancy and STIs, the reluctance and stigma surrounding sex in the AAPI community may prevent young people from accessing resources or speaking to other adults about safe sex because they're worried about looking sexually active and being shunned by their parents and community. Studies have actually shown that Asian Americans are the least likely population to use protection, which is likely a result of this stigma. And sex is healthy. Sex is a part of life. Anyone who wants to have sex should be able to, and anyone who does not want to should not feel pressured to. It's important for us to normalize sex in our community in order to allow young people to access information about sex without feeling ashamed.
Yeah. Secondly, like I said earlier, comprehensive sexual education includes information about healthy relationships and sexual violence. Sexual violence is actually disproportionately high in some Asian communities, and this makes it all the more important to talk about it. We as a community should be educating each other and our families, and maybe even children, about healthy relationships. This will help prevent sexual violence in the long run. So sending young people into the sexual world without any knowledge of what a toxic relationship is or what consent looks like can turn into a dangerous game.
Yeah. And I kind of like to think about that. Like, my parents always taught me to look both ways before crossing the street so I didn't injure myself by walking in front of a car. So in a similar vein, we should be teaching people to look for signs of unhealthy relationships or sex and seek out healthy sexual experiences in order to avoid trauma or pain. These are both examples of keeping our community safe. It's just that one of them involves sex and the other one doesn't. Obviously, teaching about sexual violence will not completely prevent it because it's caused by so many societal factors, but it will definitely contribute to prevention.
There are just so many other reasons that we should be talking about sex in our community. And these are just a few reasons to get your brain flowing. Now, talking about sex and addressing the stigma is easier said than done. So let's maybe talk about a few ways that we can get this conversation going.
Yeah, so firstly, and the most seemingly obvious one, we should try to have conversations with our future children, if we have them, about sex. We should try to normalize it for their generation the way our parents were unable to normalize it for us. I think even as we get older, it's really important to try to remember what we wished our parents had told us and how it felt to start hearing about or even having sex for the first time. It's a hard topic to bring up, but if we start these discussions at a young age and at an age-appropriate pace, it can do wonders in the future for a child's sexual ideals and health. My friend's parents actually made her a little box to write questions down when she was younger because they knew she was embarrassed to ask them in person. So assessing the situation and creating a comfortable environment for discourse is super, super important.
Honestly, I think that's such a creative idea because they can, and each person is different. Some people are really open to talking about things that make them uncomfortable and others aren't. So just opening multiple pathways for communication is vital for stuff like this. I think it's really important to try to bridge that generational gap and break the cycle that we are currently in of stigma and awkwardness around sex in general. Something else that we should consider for just the overall lack of resources surrounding sexual health in the AAPI community is maybe, for example, work on getting translations. So many clinics do not provide resources in Vietnamese, Hindi, Mandarin, or other Asian languages that may be spoken in our communities. So this likely limits people who do not feel comfortable with English from accessing all of these really useful resources.
Yeah, and aside from clinic resources, there's also just a lack of general reading material about sex in different languages. So parents who speak predominantly Vietnamese or another Asian language may not be able to read their child a book about sex or learn about educating their child on sex simply because there are few such books available in the United States. So those of us who have the resources and time to work with clinics and education systems to improve these resources available, we should take the time to do that.
We also want to note that it's not that it's impossible for educational and healthcare institutions to provide these resources. There just needs to be a large institutional push for health equity, which is another issue in itself.
Yeah. So this is a community-wide effort, and institutions in our community should also be helping with this sex positivity and sex education movement.
We really need to remember that improving stigma in our community will not happen overnight. It's a community-wide effort. Those of us who can pitch into the effort really should. India has been piloting kind of a response to taboo surrounding sex and menstruation, actually. So several hashtags, for example, hashtag lead with dignity on Twitter and Facebook have been created that have really sparked discourse on taxing period products and eradicating the shame surrounding menstruation and sex. So I think the most significant part of this movement is that all genders are on these platforms and involved with the movement, instead of these issues just being characterized as, say, a woman's issue, which it really is not. And these growing movements have sparked a significant amount of discourse among the younger generations, especially. So these have taken small but significant steps in the right direction.
So one last example that we can talk about is stigma within your own family. If you feel comfortable talking to your parents about sex and the sex education they gave you, it could be really productive to ask them why they're uncomfortable talking about sex and how you can help them improve their relationship with sexuality. So this can really help us evaluate the roots of this unhealthy relationship with sex in our community. And it can also really help to improve your family's mindset around sex.
So to wrap it all up, we just want to say that this is a discussion about consent while intoxicated and addressing stigma within the AAPI community. And it has been a very broad overview of both of these issues. So there are so many ways you can engage in safe sex and work to combat the stigma surrounding sex in the AA community. Just take the initiative, get started, and we really do need to make these changes.
Yeah, so thank you so much for coming to listen to us talk about consent and stigma. And stay tuned for our next episode, not next Friday, but the next. This episode was written by Vivia Goyle in Maya Jamalikuti, and it's affiliated with Bela New Orleans. And the music you are listening to is Superposition by Young the Giant. I don't believe in fate, no psychic vision.